Is Jesus a friend of the family? What a dumb question. I mean, of course Jesus is family friendly. Of course Jesus is for anything and everything that would strengthen the bonds and deepen the love and nurture the faith of the family. I think it's a pretty safe bet that in every grandmother's home there is a plaque somewhere that says the family that prays together stays together. Jesus didn't say that, but he could have, because Jesus is a friend of the family, right? Between now and November of 2016, the politicians will try to out-family one another. They will talk about the enormous pressures that are brought to bear on the American family and lay most of the blame at the feet of the opposing party for not caring or for instituting policies that work against the welfare of the family. And they will wheedle and they will cajole us for our votes and the promise that they will do their part to strengthen the family and thereby make America strong. Now, families are under an incredible amount of stress these days and from various fronts. The Great Recession, stagnant wages, parents trying to make it on minimum wage, eroding tax bases to support the public schools, jobs sent overseas, and divorce, single parents, deadbeat dads, abuse of every ilk, promiscuous parenting, failure to set limits, television, the internet, texting, sexting, overscheduled, overstimulated kids, and worn-out parents who try to hold it all together. Living today takes everything we've got, and families need all of the help they can get. As I was driving in Elkhart in South Bend yesterday, I noticed a billboard that had this picture of a lovely, smiling, white-teeth, blonde-haired family of mom and dad and their two adorable children and a playful puppy. If you just looked at the picture, you think, well, that could be a billboard for some dental care place, or maybe they were advertising a vacation to Disney World or something. No, that's not what the billboard was about. It was put there by a local Christian radio station. And the letters above the picture of this beautiful family read, WFRN, a friend of the family. Now, one of the questions I asked, well, what kind of a family are they a friend of? Are they a friend of that family on the billboard? Because I don't know. I don't know if any family like that. I mean, you know, the teeth whitening bill alone would bankrupt most families. You know, they're wanting to say that, yeah, they're, with all of these pervasive pressures upon the family, that we offer a positive, wholesome alternative. But as I looked at the picture, it seems like a pretty narrow understanding of what a family is. Now, I think it would be safe to say that Jesus would be in harmony with the goals of that radio station, to strengthen family. Think about everything he said about the things which destroy families. He was against adultery, against the wandering eye. He criticized the ease with which men in those days could divorce their wives and leave them destitute. He talked about honoring covenants. He took the women and children who were at the very bottom of society and lifted them up and said, they are a part of God's family as well. the equal status as God's children. Is Jesus family friendly? Well, what kind of a family is it we're talking about? You know, I have heard preachers over the years talk about the need to have a biblical model of family. But then I say, well, which biblical family are we lifting up as the model? Do we want the first family, Adam and Eve and their sons Cain and Abel? For years, Adam and Eve were pointing fingers at one another, blaming the other one for getting them kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Cain was insanely jealous of his brother Abel, and he killed him. Do we want them on the billboard? I don't think so. God made good on the promise to give descendants to Abraham, even though he was knocking 100 years old, and Sarah was just as old, and God was faithful, and Sarah delivered a son to Abraham, whose name was Isaac. But you remember the story that Abraham also had a son by a slave woman named Hagar, and it wasn't long before Sarah and Hagar are arguing over who was the rightful heir. Was it going to be Isaac or Ishmael? Nah, we don't want them on the billboard. Well, how about Isaac and Rebekah and the twins, Jacob and Esau? Now, there's a family for you. Esau was Jacob's favorite. Rebekah loved Isaac the best. And Jacob the best. Because now Isaac is old and Isaac is feeble and Isaac is blind. And so Jacob disguises himself as Esau in order to get his father's blessing. I mean, he has already stolen the birthright. Now, Jacob has to run for his life. And wherever he goes, deceit follows him. Now, is that the kind of family that we're talking about? What about beloved King David, the little ruddy-haired shepherd boy who became the greatest king of Israel? Incredible leader, but while God had an eye for him, David had a wandering eye, and one day from his terrace, he beheld Bathsheba bathing herself, and an affair followed, and so David decided that he had to get rid of Bathsheba's husband Uriah, so he set it up so that Uriah would be killed in battle, and then David could add Bathsheba to his concubine. No, that's not exactly a biblical model for family. But someone says, oh, that's the Old Testament. We got the Holy Family. Well, let's just look at the Holy Family for just a moment, shall we? Mary is pregnant, but not by Joseph. If it had not been for a dream reassuring Joseph to take her as his wife, Joseph would have divorced Mary and put her away quietly. Their child was born in poverty in a stable. Joseph disappears after Jesus is 12 years old, leaving Mary, a single mom, to have that awesome responsibility of raising Jesus herself. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus talks about the family, and he says, "Don't think that I have come to make life cozy. I've come to make a sharp knife cut between son and father, daughter and mother, bride and mother-in-law, to cut through the cozy domestic arrangements to free you for God. Because well-meaning family members," Jesus said, "can be your worst enemy. If you prefer father and mother over me, you do not deserve me. If you prefer son or daughter over me, you do not deserve me." Here, Jesus doesn't exactly come across as a friend of the family. Have you ever wondered what the disciples said to their families about their decision to follow Jesus. I think it's safe to assume that many of them were married. Sorry, honey, I don't have a lot of time to explain, and I'm not sure I could explain if I had all the time in the world, but I'm going to be leaving. I'm going to be leaving behind my occupation. I'm leaving behind my family in order to follow Jesus. To the disciples, Jesus was the Messiah. To the families, maybe Jesus was viewed as a homewrecker. The sign at the wharf said, "The Zebedee Fish Company, purveyors of fine seafood." James and John were next in line to run the family business. But they came to their dad one day after they left their catch at the wharf, said, "You know, Dad, the business model just isn't for us anymore. We've decided to change our focus. We're going to be fishing for people with Jesus now. Good luck, Pop." Now, how is it that Jesus, the Son of God, can be such a disruptive and yet healing presence in families? A person in one family becomes a Christian and they are drawn so much closer together. Another person becomes a Christian and the family fractures. Jesus brings peace to one family and he brings a sword to another. I know a man who had a very successful, very lucrative career. And at the height of that career, he decided to leave it all because he felt God was calling him to the ministry. And after a process of discernment, he said, "This is the direction we go." They sold the family's house. They moved the family to another city where he could get his seminary degree, and he was ordained, and he was shipped out to his first church. The total budget of that church was less than half of what he made in a single year. But he loved that church, and the church loved him, and his wife divorced him because that wasn't her commitment. She hadn't signed up for this deal. It may have been his calling, but not hers. Jesus was speaking to a crowd when his mother and brothers came, as Linda read for you. In some texts, it said they had some concern that he was kind of taking leave of his senses. So they had come to rescue him, and they sent word that they were there. "Jesus, your mother and your brothers are here to see you. Who are my mother and brothers?" "Because my mother and brothers are those who do the will of God. We're in a new family arrangement now." I guess one of the things I want to say this morning is that Jesus isn't all of that fired up, isn't all of that enthused about our notions of and our arrangements of family. I don't care whether you're talking about the Nelsons. I don't care if you're talking about the Bunkers with Archie and Edith and Gloria and Meathead. I don't care if you're talking about the Simpsons with Homer and Marge and Lisa and Bart and Maggie. Jesus is not all that enamored with our understanding of family because it's too partial. It is way too small. No arrangement that we come up with on our own can withstand the pressures that are exerted on the family. And this imperfect body of Jesus Christ, the church, comes along and says to families, "You aren't going to make it alone." Because today's culture has too many tentacles out there to latch on and draw you in. Your little family can't bear the spiritual and moral weight of it all that it takes to be faithful to God. And it doesn't mean that Jesus doesn't care about your family. It's just that your family alone isn't good enough to make a Christian. And so I say, God bless the wages. They are good, good people. Great integrity and character. They're going to be wonderful parents. But they will be the first to tell you that their little family isn't big enough, and it isn't strong enough, and it isn't gifted enough to make a Christian out of Lucy. Because, you see, in the church we have this bigger idea of what a family is. And presenting her this morning for consecration was their admission that they're going to need all of the help they can get. I think back to raising my own children, Lisa and John. Couldn't have done it alone. We had them dedicated to the church, and the church provided us a slew of babysitters. The church provided Sunday school teachers. The church provided mentors for the kids when it came time to explore becoming a Christian. The church provided doctors who turned the Sunday school rooms into little clinics after church was over, just to give the kids a check out and maybe write out a prescription. The church provided wise people along the way to help Lisa and John's parents through the teenage years when we wanted to put our kids out of their misery. And we ourselves wanted to be out of misery as well. It was in those tough, tough times that the church became the church, the family that held it all together. Will Willimon is one of my favorite preachers, and a few years ago I heard him telling a story of the days that he was dean of the chapel at Duke University. He said he rarely got calls from parents about their children's binge drinking or their other lifestyle issues. He said the hostile calls came from the parents who paid big money for their kids to become doctors and lawyers and high-profile, highly paid professionals. We hold you personally responsible for ruining our son's future. Billy was fine, and still he started attending your church and listening to you. And thanks to you, he's gone overboard with Christianity and won't be going to the Harvard Law School where his mother and I dreamed he would go, but he's going instead to live in some dirt poor Indian reservation teaching children how to read. Thank you very much for ruining our son's future. The parents were livid because their kids were given another understanding of family. They understood that they were a part of a very big family with Jesus Christ at his head. They exchanged one set of family values for another, the values of service and sacrifice and generosity towards those who were least in the world. You know, when I was in seminary, I learned a lot about a broader view of family, and did it simply by listening to some of the students who were there during that time from the church in Nigeria. Several of them were born in Muslim families, and for them, becoming a Christian wasn't a pleasant baptismal service followed by cookies and punch in the fellowship hall. No, the stakes were much higher. I remember one wonderful man who is now the head of the Church of the Brethren, or the EYN Church in Nigeria. His name is Musa Mambala, who grew up Muslim and tells the horrific story of being chased by his father and brother and cousins who were wielding clubs and machetes, who were going to kill him for having disgraced their family by becoming a Christian. Let me tell you something that, on a very personal nature, that happened several years ago now. My mother passed away after a 3-year bout with cancer. And it left me all alone. Sue and I were not married at the time. She stood with me by the casket. And I had this feeling of being all alone because my father and my mother and my sister were dead. I was the only one left. And then Phyllis Carter came through the line. And it was as if she was reading my mind, and she looked me in the eye and said, "David, as long as I'm alive, you will never be an orphan." Wow. We are, none of us, orphans who are in the body of Christ. Never. I've heard it said so many times by people like you that I am closer to my church family than I am to my own. I've heard some of you say those very words. And I know what you're talking about, because the church gives us fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers. God gives us this all. God weaves us and grafts us into this great family, so we know that we are not in it alone. We'll know we are never orphaned, as Jesus told the disciples in the Gospel of John. "I will not leave you orphaned, for I will send the Advocate," that Advocate, the Spirit, that works through the family of God to make of us one family in Jesus Christ. I know that for some of you, coming to church is a lonely experience because things may not be well at home. You may not have the support of your family for being a part of the church. Some of you may have other reasons why you feel distant from your families. But remember that Jesus is family friendly. He has prepared one in this place, in this community, that will see you through everything life will throw your way. So I say, if there's going to be a billboard, let's have one big group picture and say, yes, Jesus is the friend of this family, indeed, the universal family of God. Amen.